This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. My champion, and I think all of our champions of real health care reform, is Congressman Dennis Kucinich, representative from Cleveland, Ohio, and co-sponsor of H.R. 676, known as the Single Payer Bill. It's not a placebo, but the real curative for what ails our health care system. Congressman Kucinich, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Representative Kucinich, the argument right now that people are focusing on is the government option or no government option on the president's plan. Is that the way you frame it?
No. This is a much deeper question. The public option is an incredibly shrinking public option that began in the first iteration of the plan covering 129 million people. The latest, according to the Congressional Budget Office, 9 million people would be covered. And now to hear some of the statements coming out of the White House, that option may not exist at all. The problem in this country is that people are underinsured and that their premiums, copays, and deductibles are confiscatory and they don't cover their health care needs. People are going bankrupt because of the cost of health care. And that takes in about 50 million people, and then there's 47 million people without any coverage at all, because they can't afford it. The insurance companies are not charitable organizations. They make money not providing health care. And I don't think that what the White House has said yet is anything definitive about where they'll take the country.
Congressman, what's the difference between single-payer health care system? Is it as simple as just saying that the cost is taken out of it by virtue of taking the insurance industry out of the equation?
Yes. In a word, yes. One out of every $3 in the health care systems goes for the activities of the for-profit system, corporate profits, stock options, executive salaries, advertising, marketing, the cost of paperwork, 15 to 30% in the private sector as compared to Medicare's 3%. If you take that $800 billion a year and put it into care for people, you have enough to cover every person in this country with doctor of choice, full medical care, plus vision care, dental care, mental health care, prescription drugs covered, long-term care covered. You know, it's really a question as to whether health care is a privilege based on ability to pay, or is it a right, fundamental right in a democratic society, which the government has a primary responsibility for providing.
For those hysterics in the right, and there have been many of them who talk about everything from death panels to taking away our own options if we are insured and government intervention which will ration health care, how do you respond to them if we even were lucky enough to get a real debate around H.R. 676?
Well, we have rationing right now. What do you call a system where 50 million people are underinsured and 47 million people have no insurance? Health care is rationed on the basis of ability to pay. It's pure and simple. And as far as government-run, people forget that the Veterans Hospital System, which is very successful, is a government-run system. I don't hear anyone calling for the end of that. And the government provides payments for health care through Medicare. It's been a very successful program until the Bush administration passed Medicare Part D and forced Medicare to pay full price for prescription drugs and a windfall to the pharmaceutical companies. So we have various models. What I propose with John Conyers in H.R. 676 is a universal, single-payer, not-for-profit health care system where we use the money that's in the system right now for care for people, that it would convert all health care assets to not-for-profit. Government wouldn't be running the hospitals. There'd be a capitated rate that would be paid to hospitals. Physicians would work for fee-for-service, or they'd work on a salary through the hospitals. Now, this is what Canada has, and it's what other countries have. We really have to make a decision in our society whether health care is a right or a privilege.
Despite the fact that there's widespread support in the polls, the number of labor unions more every week, every month, are supporting single payer, it's not part of the national debate. Now, there will be a debate in Congress, I understand, in the House, on single payer and also on your amendment to allow for single payer on a statewide basis.
Well, think about this debate in the House on single payer. It's very interesting. We have not been permitted to have any solid discussions about single payer because it was taken off the table as soon as this Congress was convened. Very interesting, because now, without the kind of national narrative that you need to have when you go and talk to people and get them to state what they want, and then you come up with a solution, now they want to throw single payer out there for an up or down vote. I think that such a circumstance is not appropriate because there hasn't been enough debate around the country about a single-payer plan. It's all been about this mysterious, amorphous public option, which has been continually vanishing and into nothingness.
And what about your amendment to allow states to go single-payer?
Well, at this point, it's one of the few saving graces in the bill, and that is that we need to protect the right of states to create their own single-payer system if they choose to, and my amendment is in the bill right now. There's been an extraordinary effort on the part of business interests to strip the amendment, and given the way that Washington works, which is essentially a pay-to-play system on so many critical issues, I wouldn't want to bet that the amendment would stay in the bill. If it does stay in the bill, it'll be a good sign that there is some hope that the public interest will be rescued. But when you have a bill that, without a public option, will essentially be a giveaway to the insurance companies of 30 million more people, with the government helping to subsidize some of their insurance, with the pharmaceutical companies being told they don't have to worry about losing the Medicare Part D windfall that they have, that'll be kept going for another 10 years, plus there won't be any drug reimportation. What you see is the government giving a bailout to the insurance and pharmaceutical industries. That's what I'm concerned about, because it doesn't mean that the primary problem here, which is people going broke because they can't afford the health care they're paying for, and they can't afford the bills from hospitals after they get coverage, I don't know that we really have any plans to address that. So health care ends up being just another issue that is talked about intensively. But when the moment of truth comes, we'll have to see what actually is proposed to be delivered.
Congressman, are the stringent forces of the insurance industry that powerful that they can really prevent the issue from getting a full hearing before the American people?
Yes, they do have that kind of power in Washington. But they don't have that kind of power throughout the country, which is why what I'm advocating is that we go back to the people and start the process for a single-payer plan at the community level. But there's just no question about it. The insurance companies have extraordinary influence. And remember this, they're investment companies. They're businesses. Now, you can't criticize somebody for what businesses do, and that is businesses make a profit. And if in their model is profit-making, return on investment to shareholders, they derive their strength from a corporate charter. That's a totally different model than a democracy, which is power comes from the Constitution. It's supposed to be a, you know, run in the public interest. And we have a really two different models here. And if we accept the healthcare as a privilege model with insurance companies basically setting the terms under which people get insurance, then you're going to have people that are not going to get the care they need. You're going to have people that are stuck with huge co-pays and deductibles, people going bankrupt. If that's the kind of system that we want, well, we've got it right now, and unless there's some fundamental change in the legislation Congress is going to be offered by the administration, we may continue to have this system.
Obama wants to rein in the insurance companies by saying that they can't reject somebody for pre-existing conditions and they can't deny coverage when people are sick. Now, what enforcement mechanism is there in the bill? Do people have to sue the companies?
Well, theoretically, the government would mandate that as a matter of law, and they would then be subject to legal action for failing to abide by the law. Frankly, we should do that now. We don't need to put a kit and caboodle of bailout to the insurance companies as some kind of a compensation or compromise to them. For the longest time, we should have a condition where people can get insurance whether they have a pre-existing condition or not. We should have that already. We shouldn't have to wait for a bill, and we shouldn't have to trade away huge bailouts for insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies to get that. The larger problem is that people are uninsured. The larger problem is that people are not able to keep up with the premiums and the copays and the deductibles. And then the people who have no insurance, you know, how do we address their problem if all we tell them is, well, you have to have insurance now? If there's no public option, that's 30 million people are going to be mandated to have insurance, and they're still going to be stuck with copays and deductibles. You know, here's what happens with health care. If people are working, people's wages inevitably are going to suffer from this system that's set up, because that's what employers are going to do. The employers are going to start cutting wages. I think that what we need to do is just have a single-payer system where employees are compelled to participate, provided, you know, that they're a large enough business. Some would have to be given some leeway with what they pay. But if we don't have a system that is essentially a statement of one for all for one, then we are losing our anchor point as a nation.
And just for translation, when people hear single payer, they sometimes like, what is this thing? It's like Medicare, right?
Right. Yeah, Medicare for all. Government pays the bills with the available resources. It costs Medicare about 3% for the paperwork. In the private sector, between 15 and 30% of the money goes for handling the paperwork and the bureaucracy. This is one of the problems with this system. This is why we need to go to a single payer and take the savings and put it into care for people. The system we have now is inefficient. People are saying, well, they like their insurance companies. Well, you know, you give anybody a long enough experience with their insurance companies, they're not going to like their insurance companies because they end up paying, the more the people get sick, they end up paying more and more money, and people's options for longevity are limited. This is really a matter of life and death for a lot of people in America. Healthcare as a basic right in a democratic society was proposed almost 100 years ago. Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 was the first one who talked about universal health care from Washington. And so this is, we're looking at a long struggle here. This is not going to end with this legislation, whatever it does.
There are more and more people who would seem to be terrified and frightened by the propaganda that has issued around the health care debate, which again goes to people like our former lieutenant governor of New York, who has told people that there will be panels that ration people's care, that if it had been Senator Kennedy now in Great Britain or Canada or what have you, they might not have had the longevity or the treatment that gave them the longevity that they did have and so on. How do you begin to answer the issue of the rationing, but the long waits, the government presumed bureaucracy and callousness as to people's medical conditions? How do we respond to that?
The United States spends $2.4 trillion a year on health care. It's twice per capita what any other nation spends. We have enough money not just to cover everyone, but to give everyone first-rate service. We have rationing right now based on our inability to pay. And this current system, when people talk about death panels, what do you think the system is we have right now? How many insurance companies have the life and death power over individuals when they can determine whether or not someone can have a procedure or a test? Look at the system we have right now. What's happening is ideology is clouding all of this. And also the other thing I want to make a comment on is that the uprising that you've seen at meetings around the country, it's too easy to just dismiss that as the work of right-wing cranks, because the fact of the matter is that people are very concerned about what's happening in the economy, about the bailouts that have gone to Wall Street, about the fact that unemployment keeps rising, about the fact that so many people have lost their homes and their investments and their retirement security, and people are very upset. And frankly, they're looking at the political system in Washington, and they're saying, not only where's my bailout, but they're saying, where's help for me? And that's why this health care debate becomes so important, because it's really a test of whether government has any capability whatsoever to provide any help for the people or whether it's just held captive by pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies. But the underlying problem, the underlying angst that you're seeing expressed by Americans everywhere is the fact that the overall economy is in trouble and people are having difficulty coping with that. And so healthcare ends up being a flashpoint for a much deeper problem that Americans face with respect to our economy.
You had mentioned the mass unemployment around the country, and I'm just wondering what you think needs to be done. Obviously, the stimulus package didn't do enough. The TARP package didn't do enough. The unemployment is reaching almost 10%. What do you think needs to be done?
What needed to be done immediately is to take a page out of FDR, create a whole new deal with massive public works, rebuild Americas, roads, bridges, water systems, sewer systems. Could have a Green New Deal in that as well. Create tens of millions of wind and solar microtechnologies. Do the design, the engineering, the manufacturing, the installation, maintenance of tens of millions of wind and solar units. Create millions of jobs doing that and lower our carbon footprint and lower people's energy costs. Unfortunately, the obsession with taking care of things in Wall Street has been such that perhaps as many as $12 trillion in resources have gone in that direction, and we're told that that is what we need to do to help the general economy. But I think that you prime the pump of the economy by getting people back to work. And instead of a trickle-down, top-down economic model, you start from the bottom up, and you have that rising tide that lifts all boats. We haven't done that. We've had a lot of boats that are still mired in the mud because the tide hasn't come in.
Congressman, I can't help but ask what your feeling is about President Obama giving concession, if you will, or making overtures, which would seem to be of a tactical nature, to the pharmaceutical industry.
A more prudent approach would have been to look at what happened under the Bush administration and to see it as a mistake. George Bush, under Medicare Part D, took the cost controls off of pharmaceutical companies and let them charge the government whatever they please, drove huge budget problems for Medicare, billions of dollars more in cost to Medicare and profits for the pharmaceutical companies because the government didn't negotiate prices with the pharmaceutical companies through Medicare, as they do customarily with Veterans Administration. The reason why veterans have rock-bottom prices for pharmaceuticals is because the government negotiates a price, but they didn't allow that to happen in the Bush administration. They wrote the bill to bail out the pharmaceutical companies. President Obama has yet to reverse that. There was talk that he would, and now we're hearing that he won't. We're hearing also that drug reimportation, where people would get the same medication that they would buy here, they get it from Canada or some other country, that that's going to be knocked out as well. Look, this is either government of the people, by the people, and for the people, or it's government of the corporations. This is one of those moments where we're going to have to make that kind of decision. We may not make the appropriate decision in this particular health care debate. But I believe the day will come, sooner or later, where health care will be viewed as a civil right. And when it is, there will be the kind of mass movement in this country that will force Washington to respond to the will of the people in much the same way that a mass movement brought about changes in civil rights and women's rights and other important developments in American history. So that's what we're preparing for at Kucinich.us. And we urge people to go to the site during the week because we're going to start a whole new effort, taking a longer-range view that if this legislation is not appropriate and is not comprehensive enough, that we're going to continue our efforts. This is not going to be the end by any means of efforts. It'll be a new beginning.
As much as we want single payer, should we begin to moderate our sensitivities and collectively move for the public option, lest we really hurt both the president and wind up with nothing of any substance in terms of health care?
Well, it remains to be seen what we're going to wind up with, number one. Number two, I think America has to continue to push for public option. Now, that doesn't mean that you throw overboard what might be a reasonable plan, but if the plan at best is a subsidy for insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, I think all of us have to take a long and careful look at that to decide if that's what is appropriate and whether or not we're further locking in these entrenched interests. This goes beyond who the president is. You know, there's been many presidents since Teddy Roosevelt first proposed a universal health care almost 100 years ago. This really relates to what kind of life people are having, what's the quality of life, what kind of economic existence do people have if they're paying so much money for health care, or if they can't afford health care, or they can't afford the doctor bills. I mean, these are some deeper questions here than the politics. And frankly, even though I'm in politics, even though I'm a member of Congress, I refuse to look at this thing in strictly political terms, because it's really about a life and death matter for tens of millions of Americans who are struggling right now, making ends meet in families, who can't take care of the basic health care needs of their families, and who are finding these insurance companies have them over a barrel every step of the way. And, you know, again, we have to decide if health care is a right or is it a privilege. If it's a right, then everyone should be covered, and that ought to be something that the government ought to push for. And if it's a privilege, well, then hold on to your hat, because if you don't have enough money, you're going to be out of luck. I'm not ready to give up on single payer. I'm not saying my way or the highway, but I'll tell you something. We've seen the debate in America run by insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. And our choices have to be larger than the ones we're getting. Our options have to be bigger than the ones we're getting. This is not a time for minimalism and saying, well, this is the best the system can do. Because this really tells us what our country's about, whether we really have a pretense of a democracy or whether we're just stuck in some kind of a corporate oligarchy which dictates decisions under the guise of a government that's doing the best it can, when in fact the wealth is accelerating upwards and pushing more and more people towards poverty. We're at a moment of a litmus test for our nation right here, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays. But I will tell you, no matter how this bill plays out, we still need to move towards a broader reform of a single payer and health care as a civil right instead of just taking a step at a time here. We can't afford to take little steps anymore. And when the Democrats were given this broad mandate by the people in 2008, when the Democrats have control of the House and the Senate and the presidency, the best we can do is some warmed-over version of a public option or no public option at all with some euphemistic trigger or cooperatives, If that's the best we can do, then people have every right to ask whether or not their confidence was misplaced.
Well, there's public options and there are public options. Had the public option been watered down so much that even the progressives shouldn't support it?
Look, Andrew Hacker, I think it was, who came up with this idea a few years ago. In the first iteration of it, the public option was to cover 129 million people. The latest CBO assessment of public option is going to cover 9 million. Now, when it shrinks to nothingness, it loses its relevance. It just then becomes an empty slogan. And I think that's the problem we have right now. Public option has become an empty slogan and a cover for healthcare reform that really isn't delivering for the broad base of the American people. As a matter of fact, it's not even being called healthcare reform anymore. President Cincinnati called it health insurance reform. It's not about health care, it's about health insurance. Check that out. That is not an unsubtle matter in terms of where we're headed. It's still about insurance. It's not about care for people. And as long as it's about insurance, we're in trouble.
Congressman, how do you look at the Massachusetts system? Because there are these various states that have made some modification, which are still posited to many of us as being meaningful. What's your assessment?
Well, the way Massachusetts structured is still leaving some people out, but it's a lot better than a lot of other places. And I advocate that states should have the right to create their own plans. Let the states, which are, Justice Brandeis called, the great laboratories of experimentation, move forward with options. That's what states ought to be doing. The way Canada eventually moved towards its system is that the province of Saskatchewan came up with its own single-payer version. So Massachusetts has some flaws in that not everyone is really able to be covered. And I think that we have to find a way to make sure that everyone is covered and that everyone has the guarantee of universal health care. And it can't be just a slogan. It has to be a reality. And to say that, well, people aren't going to support a bill unless it has a public option, well, as you said, there are public options and there are public options. We better find out what that means by public option instead of buying a watch from a guy in a corner.
And in terms of the states, do you think that there's a real possibility that your amendment can get through in terms of allowing the states to convert to single-payer if this health care reform is passed?
Well, I can't really predict how that's going to go because there are other, I don't know. I mean, you know, that the congressional leadership goes into a room, they decide what's going to stay in the bill and what isn't. I don't know if it's in or out of the bill. What I do know is that the latest report we're getting is that Senator Baca's bill in the Senate doesn't have a public option. Let's go back to that for a minute. What could happen is that as a political strategy, you have the House pass a bill which has a, quote, public option, unquote, however minimal and meager it is, and then the Senate doesn't have one, and then a conference committee, they strip any public option out and bring it back to the House and say we have to support this in order to protect the White House and the Democratic Party. I think we've got to be worrying about protecting the American people. Because if this is all only about party politics, we're lost. You really have to look at what's the policy. What are you going to do to make sure everyone is covered? What are you going to do to make sure that people aren't going to go broke in the current health care system? What about these subsidies to the insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies? I mean, these are questions that are going to have to be answered.
And as we wrap up, we'd love to give you an opportunity. We're frightened that the unemployment rate is hitting up to 10%, certainly in communities of color, in areas like Appalachia, etc. It's already at depression levels. Yes, we need jobs, more jobs, and yet there doesn't seem to be another stimulus package on the horizon. What do we do to push and pull to get a much greater recognition that it's the people that need the bailout, not Wall Street?
Well, one report says there were almost 15 million people unemployed in August. And we really need to go back to a model which sees government as priming the pump of the economy. When the private sector does not provide jobs, government has a moral responsibility to be the employer of last resort. And so we need to take a page out of Franklin Roosevelt. We need a new deal to put millions of people back to work rebuilding America. We need a green deal to put millions of people back to work building a new energy infrastructure. And we need to see government having a public purpose here. The private sector believes that a certain amount of unemployment is necessary for the proper functioning of the economy. And it's easy for some of those people to say if they have jobs. But we're seeing massive jobs cuts and dislocations going on and our trade laws that are in trouble. So we need to change trade laws So there's human rights, workers' rights, environmental quality principles. We need to make sure that employees have a Free Choice Act. That was a promise that was made during the campaign that has not been delivered on to labor. And, you know, it's worth reflecting on this. People should have the right to organize, the right to collective bargaining, the right to strike, the right to decent wages and benefits, the right to a secure retirement, the right to be able to collect if they're from their employer if they're injured on the job. These are workers' rights, but they're human rights. We need to be thinking again about creating jobs. We need to reset the pointer of our administration by refocusing on job creation, on money for health care and education, on protecting people's retirement security. I mean, we have all the resources. The question is, is government going to exist as a service station for interest groups and help to accelerate the wealth of the nation upward? Or will government be an engine for an equitable distribution of wealth in a democratic society? Will we have an economic democracy, or are we just simply going to be working and having the company store own our souls?
Well, I think that with people as engaging and gracious as yourself, who would give us government by the people and for the people and not government by and for the corporations, the answer is clear. And we can't thank you enough for joining us. You've been gracious. You've been consistent, lo, these many years. And it has been a pleasure to speak with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, again, representative from Cleveland, Ohio, and most importantly for tonight's discussion, co-sponsor along with John Conyers of H.R. 676, known as the single-payer bill. We need it.
Thank you, and please go to Kucinich.us for information. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.